Good morning. I love it how right before I give my talk, I get to say that what I'm doing is far beyond words. It's nice to be here today with you all. Beautiful morning. As you were all coming in, I was sitting watching a squirrel running around in the backyard. It seemed so peaceful and simple. So my topic today is intimacy. Intimacy is a central theme of Zen Buddhism. It comes up again and again. And sometimes I think intimacy in Zen is really different than the way we usually think of intimacy. So when I was getting ready to talk about this, I thought I would look it up in the dictionary and find out at least one person's idea of what this word means. So I have a really large Merriam-Webster's dictionary in my house. And the first definition it offers is a close connection. And the second is close personal relationship characterized by affection or love. And so I thought, oh, Zen is not so different. Zen is not so different than the way we usually think of this. As this is what we're talking about, connection, affection, and love. Central to what we do here. So in order to talk about this, I thought it would be fun to read some poetry. I recently came across a Chinese nun and poet named Xingang while I was doing research for the class on Zen women ancestors that will be starting next week, which I'll be leading with Monica Reedy. Xingang lived in the 17th century in China. She was a Zen nun. She was a Dharma heir of a Linji master named Yuan Wu. No one knows who any of these people are, so don't feel left out. Some people might know that Linji became Rinzai. Some people here are familiar with Rinzai Zen, which is a little different than the style of practice that we have here, which is called Soto Zen. So she was a Rinzai master, and she practiced for many, many years, and then she became the abbess of a convent called Crouching Lion Temple. Wouldn't it be cool to practice at a place called Crouching Lion Temple? Sometimes I think we need more kung fu. Our temple, of course, we call this place Minnesota Zen Meditation Center, but it does have a Japanese temple name, which is Ganshoji, which means living in vow, which may not have quite as much kung fu resonance for you, but does speak to what the founder of this place hoped we would do. Now, the vow in question is the vow to devote yourself to the welfare of the world. Come on in. So Xingang was a well-known teacher. She had over 1,000 students, and she was quite beloved. There are many poems from her students about their affection for her. But to the topic of intimacy, I'd like to read this poem that Xingang wrote. The Meditation Cushion. A single meditation cushion, and one is completely protected. Earth may crumble, heaven collapse, but here one is at peace. Sacred titles and worldly fame both fade away in the sitting, and a great universe assembles on the tip of a feather. A single meditation cushion, and one is completely protected. Earth may crumble, heaven collapse, but here one is at peace. Sacred titles and worldly fame both fade away in the sitting, and a great universe assembles on the tip of a feather. So, if you have been watching a lot of TV and seeing Viagra ads, this may not make you think of intimacy. But what this poem is about is intimacy, and what it brings us to is intimacy. Connection. The whole universe assembles on the tip of a feather. Now, normally we would not associate something so fragile and tiny and light with a connection to everything, being able to uphold the entire universe, which is assembled at rest on a feather. This is the intimacy of Zen, seeing that in any small, tiny thing, everything is connected. This is not usually how the way we see things. Usually, we think, we don't even notice the feather. How many feathers have blown out of our path without us even seeing them? So not only do we not even see the connection of the feather to the world, we don't see the feather. But one of the great joys of Zen practice is mindfulness, being aware of what's here. And as we bring our attention to these small details of what's here, these fragile little things, these tiny moments, here is where we can see somehow a connection to everything. And why this is so important is because the reason that we don't see this connection and we don't see these small things is because of the relentless activity, the divisive activity, the judging activity of our mind. Now, the mind is not a terrible thing. It's a wonderful thing and a useful thing and a beautiful thing. But it does sort of overact. It does maybe more of what it's intended to do than we really need. And it cuts us off because the idea of this feather connecting to the world doesn't normally make sense because we think, well, what can I do with the feather? Not much, so I'll not notice it. We're usually thinking in terms of how we can divide the world up with our mind to get what we want. And this is the basic idea of why we suffer in Buddhism. So, Xingang is inviting us to see the tiny, tiny elements of our lives, just the moments, the details of our lives as our connection to the infinite, as our connection to the vast, unknowable beauty of the universe. Intimacy, a close connection. And love. And it's funny because if you go, why does this make you feel love? It's very hard to explain. But I think almost everyone here, probably everyone here, who has touch this kind of attention to the moment knows what we're talking about. How naturally arises out of this a sense of compassion. You're connected, so you feel some compassion. Your heart grows. So this poem is interesting, though, because of where it begins. For where it takes us is intimacy, but where it begins is a single meditation cushion and one is completely protected. Earth may crumble, heaven collapse, but here one is at peace. So, fear is a powerful force. And I like how she doesn't explain what you're protected from or how you're protected. The poem's intention is to evoke your feeling of safety. We need to feel safe in order to feel intimacy. Fear is one of the principal barriers to intimacy. And this probably seems obvious, But if it doesn't, I invite you the next time you feel intense fear to think about how much love and connection you're feeling to the object of your fear. Fear's purpose is to separate us from the object of fear so we can defend ourselves. And that's very useful, you know, when you're being hunted, my friends, by a saber-toothed tiger. I invite you to feel fear and react appropriately. However, the instances of being hunted by saber-toothed tigers are not so great in 21st century America. There's probably more fear going around than we need. How about another one? The next time you're having an argument with someone you love, perhaps your spouse, and you feel so angry, if you look inside yourself, ask what you are afraid of, and you will find fear. And you will also probably feel the pain of separation from someone you love. Pain from separation. This is why intimacy is considered important in Zen, is because we're here for the alleviation of suffering. So this separation is creating this pain. And so we move towards closeness so we don't have to feel that. So we can open up. So we can help others not feel that. So I heard a funny story yesterday about the Minnesota State Fair. A young man told me that he went to the fair with his girlfriend and they went into the haunted house. And she was very frightened. And so she was clinging to him. She had grabbed his back and she was clinging to him. And it was a very cute story. I thought, that's really cute. Is that cute? So that's pretty cute. And that's good, right? I bring this up because fear can make us feel a connection. You know, fear, she felt a connection to him. That's okay. But there's a little problem when it gets really big. Because then, if you're using fear to draw yourself to people, you're creating an object of fear that you're separating yourself from. And this is, in the biggest example, why we have to vilify people in foreign countries in order to go and kill them. We can unify our country by creating an evil enemy like Iraq. Right? So, this is a normal human process. But in Zen, we're looking to do something bigger. So she does not say the entire universe accepting the things you don't like assembles on the tip of a feather. Right? Everything. This is a practice of connecting to everything, loving everything. That may sound difficult, and it's probably not something one can consciously do. There are ways to explain it. There are philosophies in Buddhism explaining how everything is connected already. You're just not seeing it. But what really matters to me and what I would invite you to do is meditate and see it for yourself. Because it does happen. Xingang's poem, I think, is encouraging. She says she just invites her students to feel safe. And as we feel safe, it helps us to feel more intimate. And as we feel more intimate, it helps us to feel more safe. So this relationship is beautifully expressed in this poem. And I want to read one more poem by Xingang. And this one I'm not going to talk about very much at all. And it has a lot of themes, so I just invite you not to think about it a whole lot or try and figure out what's going on, but just, as I read through it, just try and feel the voice of this old teacher who clearly had opened her heart to whoever would listen to this poem. And I will say the basic themes are going from suffering to peace. And he culminates in intimacy. New admonitions to the assembly. 4 verses. This floating life, an ever-changing dream, yet we bitterly toil away. The entire day full of busyness as our karma grinds us down. If only you can make a clean sweep of the cave of ignorance, you will be left with a life full of leisurely freedom and ease. Human life and this mirage of a world are kept going by desire. Once desire stops, all is the realm of the great enlightened one. The lords of the heavens and hells will find themselves speechless. Having poked through the web, there will be no conditions of desire. The mind always composed and calm, that is the original purity. Careful study and accumulation of facts are turbid worldly emotions. If you immediately change your life and step onto the further shore, your ignorance will shatter on its own with a laugh and a song. Understand the ordinary mind and realize you are naturally complete. Ask urgently who you were before your father and mother were born. When you have seen through the method that underlies them all, the mountain blossoms and flowing streams will rejoice with you. The mountain blossoms and flowing streams will rejoice with you. Well, you might say, mountains don't rejoice. They don't have feelings. The joy that Xingang is pointing to is beyond what we can conceive. It's not beyond what can happen, or what perhaps you could say you can experience. But it is beyond understanding. It is a complete connection, yet again, that she's talking about. A connection to the natural world that is so complete that there's no separation. Sometimes intimacy in this tradition is talked about in a way, you can't be intimate, because to be intimate, there'd have to be a connection. And you're not even separate enough to have a connection. Right? So, we can do this. We can do this. So Xingang was very popular, as I said before. I believe she had 1,500 students living in her monastery. In those days, monasteries were actually basically like giant communes. They would have a big farm, and everyone would work together and practice together and support each other under the direction of an abbot, like Xingang. And she had 7 Dharma heirs, which means people who she authorized to teach independently. She had ordained many, many other people, but these were the ones that she was like, "You're mine. You can go out and found your own temples or whatever." And many of them wrote poems. I'd like to read one of them by a woman named Yikui. So, I don't know how many people here have a relationship with a Zen teacher, but it's a wonderful and fundamental part of our practice, historically speaking. And many people here really value it. I certainly think it's really nice to have my teacher is Tim Burkett, who's our head teacher, and he really supports my aspirations and what I'm doing here. And we have some pretty amusing times, too. So anyway, Yikui clearly had a great deal of love for her teacher. And at the age of 35, she'd been practicing with Xingang for 12 years when Xingang died. And she wrote this poem. "Mourning my teacher, the venerable nun Xingang. After submitting myself to her rigorous training for several years, a midday dream shattered awake, tears not yet wiped away. Ah, why did I have to be separated from my teacher so soon? The family pine tree has grown still and knows no sorrow. Since when have spring and fall passed without me serving her? I find myself imitating the birds crying over the fallen branches. Brokenhearted, I listen as again and again they return my calls. Then silently, I shut the brushwood gate against the wind and rain. So it's hard, sometimes, to be intimate. Because the intimacy that most of us know and can talk about is not this intimacy with some infinite connection to everything, but intimacy with people that we love. And I think it's clear that she loved her teacher from reading this poem. And I would like to say, towards the end of this poem, it's interesting in terms of connection, because she's crying and she says, "Brokenhearted, I listen again and again as the birds return my calls." So if you've done some zazen, you know that you just hear these sounds, sounds that normally we don't even notice, the sounds of birds. So here she is, totally brokenhearted, and yet still she has this openness to the world, and intimacy. The last line is, "Then silently I shut the brushwood gate against the wind and rain." And this is the true sorrow of this poem. She shuts the gate. She cuts herself off. That's the true sorrow of this poem. So loss, of course, cannot be avoided. But, fortunately, we have that old saying, it's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all. And these relationships with people, as this relationship she had with her teacher, she was willing to do it. She knew the teacher was going to die. She knew that. And she gave herself to the teacher. So, these poems are about nuns. Their relationships are expressed in this way. So maybe you don't live in a... Does anyone here live in a convent? Okay, I didn't think so. You know, we have our own relationships. These relationships are our opportunity to move to intimacy. And, you know, we move to intimacy in the way that we can. Seeing how fear is getting in the way of your intimacy is a beautiful thing. But just offering yourself to the possibility is wonderful. And this intimacy we're talking about here is not just, the thing is, it's not limited like, I want to be intimate with you when the candles are lit and you got the Barry White on. Right? This is, I want to be intimate with you when I don't know you. When I look at my partner and I think, I don't get it. I don't get you. This happens to people. You have someone you love and something comes up and you just can't connect. That's where I invite you to move towards intimacy. Don't push away. Don't let yourself run away. So what would intimacy in that moment be? Be intimate with what's happening. So usually, it's all thought up here, but you can just say, what do I feel? Try and understand how someone else feels. So you open yourself up to the phenomena of the moment. And it's really helpful to do that if you have some meditation practice, so your mind does not constantly run over your life without any awareness on your part. And, you know, through intimacy with a person, through making that connection, we really do some, I think, psychological work that needs to happen if we're going to have intimacy with everything. For some of us, that's easier than others, I gather. I won't tell you which side of that I'm on. So, I'd like to read another poem from Yiqui. I haven't told you that I'm just really excited to have found this treasure trove of poetry, these Chinese women. What a joy. So, quite a few years later in her life, Yiqui wrote this poem. This is Yiqui, who was Xingang's student. Inscribed on a mirror, we meet and scrutinize each other. I confront my own nature. If within there is no self, then each and everything is intimate. Inscribed on a mirror, we meet and scrutinize each other. I confront my own nature. If within there is no self, then each and everything is intimate. So, one would think that intimacy would be about making a connection to something outside of ourselves. But as I was saying just a minute ago, one of the things that really helps to facilitate this is if we have intimacy with ourselves. Because actually, most of the time, we go through life operating out of a vast, incomprehensible system of unconscious tendencies. And that's stuff we're totally not intimate with. And what it tends to do is keep us from being intimate with other things. So one of the things that happens if you sit and do zazen is you start to notice, ooh, there's a lot of thinking. Wow! Maybe you don't have that attitude, or maybe you do, but wow, look at all this thinking. But then, you know, other things come up where you're like, wow, I'm thinking about whether I look cool again. not that I ever do that. So, getting to know, that's just one example. There's a million things. You can get to know yourself, and this actually helps you to see through these tendencies. Because if you sit some more, you start to go, well, is that who I am? Is that tendency me? Or is that tendency just something that's happening? And then something else comes up that you would normally think, oh, that's me. And you go, is that me, or is that just something that's happening? And what can happen is you can suddenly go, where's the me part? Where's the me at the middle of all of this? Because it just kind of looks like things are just happening. The world is just happening. And there are some things that I normally go, this is me. And that's you, and this is a table, and this is my thought. But some meditation practice can allow us to just go, oh, wow, look. Happeningness. Happeningness is happening. And here, there's a connection, because you don't have to make a connection when that happens. Because there's no you that has to reach out to make a connection. It's just everything, everythinging. So this is what she's talking about, seeing through the self. Look at the self. The mind looks at the mind. The mind can see through the mind. When there is no self, then everything is intimate, to quote the poem. So how about more poetry? I love having these poems because then I can have these ladies do my job for me. So, she says, to my meditation companion, Dongyang, who's undoubtedly another nun, the ancient hall stands tall and proud, completely renewed. Locked inside the caves and clouds is a kindred soul. Burning incense, sitting silently, you are completely at ease. The words of a tongueless person are the most novel of all. So I wanted to read that as that it is really pretty amazing if you come here and sit down for a retreat. And everyone comes in the morning, and if you have time to say hi, you do, but mostly it's like you just got to get, it's early, and you get set up, and no one, you know, sit down. They ring that bell, and then, you know, we don't talk till noon, if it was a half-day session like yesterday. Or if it's a really long one, we don't really talk for a week. And we're all in here, living together, taking care of our tasks mindfully. And then the last bell rings and everyone gets up and love just comes out. This profound sense of affection and connection that everyone has when no one said anything to each other. It's the weirdest thing, you know, because the first time you come in here and you see everyone sitting around like this, you think, what is that? This practice is about community. The only it takes a little while maybe to see how it's about community. This practice is about connecting to people. But we do a lot of it without saying anything. We don't have to say anything. Matt and I, we don't have to talk all the time. We just take care of business. It's good. Well, then it's time to talk. You know, sometimes it's time to talk. Sometimes it's time to be quiet. But it's a wonderful way. It's a wonderful way to connect with people. Just by being able to be still. Or even if you're not like meditating silently together, even just to be very quiet while someone else talks and give them the gift of silence so they can feel profoundly heard. This is a wonderful way to cultivate intimacy. I think one person who hangs out here does a is a little thing he does with his wife where they walk around the lake and is maybe like halfway around the lake, one of them is totally silent and just listens. And then the other half, the other one is totally silent and just listens. And they really like it. It feels very nice to them. Maybe that's just something someone does, but it points to something. Alright, so well, I think I'm going to talk a little bit more and read one more poem. So I'm going to read a poem by a different Chinese nun from the 17th century named Xian, who did not have a relationship with these two. One thing that to make this poem, in order for this poem to make sense, you do need to know what an okesa is, which is a robe. So like if you see like Buddhist priests or monks, you know, they have their robes. In our Chinese and Zen tradition, they're called okesas. And many of us here wear them if we're having formal services, but not during our contemporary practice like today. So anyway, you know what these look like. It's your robe, and it symbolizes your commitment to devoting yourself to the welfare of the world. And it's kind of a fidgety garment. If you go and watch people, they're always like, or at least I am. Maybe it's because I don't really know how to use it. But anyway, it's kind of a funny thing that it's for some reason it takes a little care. It takes a little constant attention to make it good. And I don't think this is an accident, because Zen is about constant attention and taking care. So, we have our okesas, and we kind of have to straighten them up and stuff. And each of these things, you know, there are many little things if you stay around here. All the little bows we do, all the very specific ways we do things here are not because we're trying to be uptight. It's because they are practices of mindfulness. So, in some traditions, you have a whole bunch of meditation practices that you accumulate. But in Zen, we don't have a whole lot. But one of the main ones is when you stand up, turn around, and fluff up your cushion into a ball and put it in the middle of the cushion. And do that with your whole heart. Don't do it like, ah, man, I got to get to work. What a waste of your life. Oh, man, I got to get to work. How much of our life is, oh, man, I got to get to work. Don't do that. What a bummer. Take care of what's in front of you. See it. Open your heart to it. If you don't like it, look at that. Whatever. Investigate. And, you know, by saying this, I'm saying this is that opportunity for intimacy. It may sound funny that I'm like, I want to be intimate with my meditation cushion. Maybe that's weird. Whatever. I know that by doing that, from experience, I know that by doing that, I'm able to go into the world and be more intimate with my family, with people who come to me for help, with myself. I know that because it's happened. So by giving myself to the intimacy of the moment, again and again, as best I can, I can carry myself in the world with more openness, connection, and love. So, I think I'll read this poem. On a spring night, admiring the moon with Master Lang Ying. The luminous moon drifts by so lightly. The sutra hall lies silent without a sound. Bits of moonlight pierce the cracks between the bamboo. Its round refulgence perches in the intersecting pine branches. The dew dampens the nests filled with noisy swallows. The wind combs the grasses filled with croaking frogs. I sit with the master after the ceremony is over. As face to face, we straighten our okases. Well, thank you. This has been a fun thing to talk about. And I'm curious as to whether you all might have something to say about it. So I invite questions or comments.
Of Patrick's Cabaret, there was lots of great dancing, blocking, popping, and also a lot of spoken word and some excellent songs. I've never been disappointed in performances of Patrick's, so I'd recommend that if you can squeeze it into your schedule. But I wanted to say that there was one song, I can't even remember the artist's name now, woman songwriter, and the song basically was, she said, about looking for love in all the wrong places. But one of the lines of the song kind of jumped out at me was, waiting for the door to open when I hold the key in my hand.
I've done that. Further, things. Well, are you looking at my? You're asking if I can. You can borrow my book.
No, I was just wondering if that was a practice that they did in those nunneries. You know, writing poems like some places do calligraphy. Mm. And I mean, was it?
There's no mention of that in this. You know what? What I noticed when I was doing this was, I was noticing the amount of heart in these poems, and I realized that in Zen you have the two principal modes of expression you have from Chinese Zen are koans, which are these kind of crazy stories that are, by the way, always about two people. I didn't have time to get to this topic. What is the basic record of Zen? Stories of two people meeting. Two people meeting and having a brief exchange, and the purpose of the meeting is to realize intimacy. So, but the funny thing is, if you're familiar with them, they don't really look like that to most of us because they tend to be confrontational. They're sometimes violent, and they're really confusing. They're beautiful in their way, but you kind of have to work with them to understand what they're doing. But anyway, if you look at Zen poetry, it tends to be all, you know, full of beautiful natural imagery, full of heart. So it's like there are these two ways to get us there. And one is this, oh, I'm going to give you a poem that's going to encourage you. And the other one is, I'm going to give you a koan to challenge you. But as to whether this particular group of people, like writing poetry, was a particular practice, I don't know. But clearly she had other Dharma heirs who were poets. So whether it was like their practice or they just did it, I don't know. But it's cool.
Are they attracted, you know, poets would attract students to the author?
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really fun because you can see their relationships if you read a bunch of these. You should get this book. Daughters of Emptiness. Okay, well, thank you all so much. It's been wonderful.